Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, September the 11th. Well, of course, just mentioning September the 11th brings back a few memories. Tonight, we'll be chatting with our good friend Frank Burke, joining us from Wisconsin. And we will remind ourselves a little bit of 9/11, 21 years ago. But, you know, days like that just don't there's always a time to talk about 9/11. Because it was such an amazing day. We'll talk about the FBI raid. We'll talk about the Queen passing away. I mean, in so many ways, a lady that her whole image was one. It's almost like we're losing a big one from that generation. That's sort of how I feel about it. We'll talk about the President Biden's speech, you know, the scary speech about how every MAGA Republican is a threat to the nation. And then we'll get just a little bit of the politics up in Wisconsin. Wisconsin is the big state these days, a state that goes one way or the other by a small margin. And they've got two big elections up there of interest, the governor's race and the Senate race. So we'll talk to Frank a little bit about those. So let me say hello to Frank. Frank, I have to tell you that it's 82 degrees here in Dallas, Texas, which is actually quite nice for us. How is the weather up in Wisconsin?
The weather up here is beautiful. It's actually it's raining, and it's going to rain all night, and we haven't had rain in about a week, so it's very welcome. And the temperature is in the 60s, going down possibly as low as near to 40 tonight, which is lovely sleeping weather. So
yes,
we're enjoying it.
So this is the kind of weather where you want to turn on the fireplace, I guess, light up the fireplace. That's what I remember from being up there, that nights like this are just great for the fireplace. Maybe a little wine, a little cheese, and maybe some romantic movie, Frank.
Or some good music,
Why don't you just go all the way, you know, not just get the wine, but get the cheese, the movie, the music. Might as well take advantage of the situation, Frank.
Well, I definitely think so. And, it's delightful. We're getting into that. This is my wife, Peg, and I. This is our favorite season of the year. In fact, we were married in late October. And it's just the leaves have started to come down, not greatly, but you can see the orange and the yellow at the tops of some of the trees. And oddly enough, one thing we have here that's delightful are cranes, the birds, cranes. And this morning, we saw a huge flock of them in a field, bigger than any flock I've ever seen before. And they were doing their mating dance and all sorts of things. But I have to believe they're doing that because they're about to leave. They're about to migrate south. But lovely, lovely birds. And, you know, a true look, when you see them flying, it's like you're looking at the prehistoric era.
Yes.
Because that's what they look like. And they're great. They're absolutely great.
Right.
So.
Well, for people, I've always said this, for people who have never lived in Wisconsin or the Midwest or any of those states up there, for people who have never lived up there, they don't understand how beautiful autumn can be. And I agree with you. It's a beautiful time of the year, as I remember up there, autumn, August, September, middle of September, October, into November, Thanksgiving, just absolutely beautiful time. You know, it's getting a little colder, I guess, as you get closer to Thanksgiving. But this is still the kind of weather that you don't, you know, it's not like freezing cold. I mean, it's very pleasant, actually. It's Fire right. Sweaters, I like to say.
Yeah, cool and brisk. And, you know, when you get into the changing leaves, if you get into the southwest portion of the state, which is the hilly area, the unglaciated area, what they call the driftless area, it approaches anything New England has in terms of the beauty of the leaves and the country roads. And, you know, we have a lot of Amish out here, so it's very quaint. It's a beautiful place. It really is.
It is. No, I just, it's one of my best memories of having lived up in Wisconsin. Well, I wanted to ask you, it was 21 years ago, if we go back 21 years ago tonight, 9/11/2001, if we were doing a podcast, I'm sure we'd be talking about this terrible thing in New York. It's 21 years, but I don't know if it's me or maybe, Frank, you have a similar reaction, but there are certain days that you just remember forever. I suppose for the previous generation, it was December 7th. To some extent, for them, is also November 22nd, 1963. Everybody,
right.
I suppose, remembers where they were or how they got the news of President Kennedy. And I think for maybe my generation and my kids, it's 9/11. I mean, I remember exactly what I was doing. I was watching the TV, Frank, and putting on my tie when the second plane hit. I was watching it. And I couldn't believe it. At first, it's like, did I just see what I just saw? And then, of course, at that moment, we knew that this was more than just a pilot who had made a mistake. So I just remember this day quite well. I remember the families. And many of those families had very young kids who are now probably in their 30s. And they grew up without fathers. A lot of orphans were created that day. A lot of heroes were created that day. A lot of firemen. Having grown up in New York, I'm sure you're sympathetic to all those New York firemen who went in there, and many didn't come back. So there's a lot to remember about 9/11.
Very much so.
And I just hope we never forget. I hope that 20 years from now, we're still remembering it. Obviously, the intensity passes. I understand that. But, for me, it won't pass. But maybe for the next generation, it will. But for me, it will always be that terrible morning when I was wondering if Dallas was going to get hit. You know, I think everybody was thinking that way. You know, you're sitting there saying, okay, is Dallas going to be next? Are our planes going to be flying into our buildings? We have enough buildings here for that to happen. So anyway, that's a long-winded memory, Frank, of that day. I'm curious what you remember.
Well, it was a very vivid memory, I can tell you, because our son, our youngest son, Daniel, was going to Japan, and one of his roommates from college had become a steward on the planes, what's the term for it? Flight attendant.
Yeah, flight attendant.
Yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, he had set him up to go on a United flight from O'Hare and Chicago to Seattle. So we were taking him down to O'Hare from Milwaukee at about 5 o'clock in the morning. He had the flight was right after six. So we're going down, and I'll never forget on the radio, they said, the big story today is, will Michael Jordan rejoin the Bulls this year? And I looked at my wife and said, well, it's a slow news day.
Right.
Literally.
Right.
So we get to the airport, we dropped him off. And we came back and we stopped at a Denny's for breakfast. And when we were paying the bill, the woman was very upset at the counter. And I said, what's the matter? And she said, well, a plane flew into the World Trade Center. And I said, well, that's terrible. But, you know, it's kind of happened before. At the end of the Second World War, Obama flew into the Empire State Building.
And then
another woman came out of the kitchen and said, the second tower has been hit. And we knew this was something else. So we get back home, and we're watching this on TV, and, of course, they ordered all the planes to land. And they said, now nobody knew much of what was happening, but the announcer said, it was that gentleman from Canada who has passed away. I think he was on ABC. And he said,
Peter
at
Jennings,
this point,
Peter Jennings,
yes.
Peter Jennings, yeah.
I think you're right. At this point, the only plane unaccounted for is a United flight to the West Coast. And we looked at each other and thought, oh, my God, is Daniel on that? And for 15 minutes, until they mentioned where it was from and where it was exactly going, we were in a state of absolute panic.
Oh, wow.
So to finish the story, we didn't know where Daniel was.
Just to interrupt you for a second, that United 93 is the one that went down in Pennsylvania, right?
That's the one, yes.
Yeah, right,
yes.
Okay.
And we didn't know where he was, and we didn't hear from him till about 12:30, right after noon. And he said, look, we were on the runway the whole time, and the only thing we knew was that what the pilot said, there's been a national emergency, we can't take off. And I said, well, how do we get a hold of you? And he said, well, you can't come down to O'Hare because the airport is closed, busing us into the center of Chicago. Well, that's great. So I said, okay, here's what you do. Go to Union Station and get the train for Milwaukee. When you have your reservation, call me and tell me what time it's coming in that I can pick you up. Well, of course, that was he did, and at 5 o'clock, we picked him up. But that was the last train for Milwaukee because the only other train that ran to Milwaukee was the one that runs to Seattle on the old Milwaukee Road. And they stopped all trains that went through tunnels until they could inspect the tunnels. And of course, the tunnels were further on in Wisconsin, but they weren't going to let that train go because of the until all the tunnels had been inspected and they knew they were safe. But for those 15 minutes, I have to tell you, my wife and I were absolutely petrified.
Yeah, the longest, as they say, the longest 15 minutes. I did not have experiences like that, but my biggest concern, I had gone to the office, and our three sons were in school. So at that time, our oldest one had just started ninth grade, so he was in high school. The other two were in what we call middle school. So they were in two different buildings, in other words, two over here and one over there. And it's like my biggest concern at the time was, you know, I said, just make sure, you know, pick them up and go home. And she did. And one funny little thing that came out of all of this I learned later is that our second son, who at the time was in eighth grade or seventh grade, said that there was a rumor around the school, the kids had, were talking about a rumor, that China had invaded the United States, and that's what this is all about. So these kids were, like, talking to each other about this, and so, you know, the imagination of seventh graders, you know.
They weren't prescient, yes.
Yes, but I mean, you know, just the kinds of things that, you know, you say to one kid, he says to another kid, and by the time you get to the fourth kid, it's China invading the United States, you know. So obviously that did not happen. But for me, the most amazing thing about 9/11 is, you know, we live, as you know, in Dallas-Fort Worth, and Dallas-Fort Worth has one of the busiest airports in the country. It's in the top three or four.
Right.
And any night, I mean, any night, you can look north from where we are, and you can see a line of airplanes landing. They make this incredible line that I don't know how many there are, but it's a long, long line. It's really cool to watch. It's like, you know, these little dots, you know, one after another waiting to land. And for almost 2 weeks, there was not a single plane in the air. And that was so strange because we're so used around here. You know, you have Love Field, very busy airport.
Oh, yeah.
You've got DFW, an extremely busy airport. And you have a bunch of other private airports. And, you know, Addison Airport, very busy airport. And it just seemed like all of a sudden there was nothing in the air. And that just seemed so spooky. I remember on Friday night, 9/11 was a Tuesday. But by Friday night, we had a baseball game that, you know, what we call fall baseball, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Fall
sure.
baseball. And we get to the game. And there's nobody there. They had canceled the game. None of the parents wanted to take the kids out, Frank.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was a petrifying thing because the worst thing is you don't know. You don't know who did it. You're not absolutely sure. And, you know, do it one way, it's one thing. The other way, it's the other thing. But uncertainty is the worst.
That's right. And that's why I've always had a good feeling for George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, because at that time, we had no idea of what could happen next. I don't think people today understand how scary that is when you don't know where the next one is coming, whether it's a tunnel,
right,
whether it's in a building. Well, I mean, there were so many things that could have happened. And the way I thought Bush and Cheney were able to put everything together and at least prevent another big attack, I always gave them a lot of credit for that, Bill. I mean, Frank.
Well, I will, too. I do, too. And the other one that I think was an absolute genius to do it and very courageous to do it when he did was whoever it was at the FAA who said, get every plane into an airport. Everybody lands. There will be nothing in the sky, which was the only way to tell how many had been hijacked.
Exactly. Exactly. No, that's exactly right. I don't know who made that call. I guess ultimately, either made by President Bush or somebody recommended it to President Bush. But you're right.
Right.
No, I just thought it was an absolutely amazing day. So 9/11 plus 21, I guess we'll call it, an incredible day. Well, Frank, let's get into some of the current events. There's a couple of things here I wanted to chat with you about. It's been about a month now, maybe longer, actually, almost 5 weeks, since the FBI broke into President Trump's home. There's a lot of things that we don't know, Frank, and I'm willing to accept that. But we crossed a line. We crossed a line by going into a former president's home. This is something that has never happened before. And I'm disappointed, maybe I shouldn't be, by the lack of transparency from this administration. I would have thought that by now, they would have had a case of what they were looking for, what it was, and why they needed to break this line or cross this line that had never been crossed before. And here we are 5 weeks later, and all we're getting is leaks to their favorite newspapers.
Yes.
You know, every day that goes by, I get more skeptical about what exactly this is all about, Frank.
Well, I think it's an indication of how desperate the Democrat Party is right now. And this was the act by which they put all their chips on the table, that we've got to do something. We've got to get Trump. And the obsession with Trump is absolutely sick. They cannot let it go. It's this Trump derangement syndrome, as they used to call it, which was one thing when he was president. I mean, I can understand. I like Trump. I think his policies were wonderful. I think he did a great job. So that's where I stand. But I could understand a lot of people being put off by his personality. Now, having grown up in New York and been in business there, I kind of understand that personality. And you can't take everything seriously. But the fact that they did this terrible thing, this unprecedented, awful thing. And what did they put on the table when they did it? The entire credibility of the administration, the FBI, and all of the people involved in it. And you know, the FBI had enough problems. Let's go back. You know, they've always had great press. Back in the 30s with the gangsters and John Dillinger and the rest of them. But J. Edgar Hoover, who was a kind of folk hero in the 50s, there's a lot of people didn't know about him, that he was compiling dossiers on people who were in power so as to be able to blackmail them into leaving him in his position. The things he did with Martin Luther King, blackmailing him, but unauthorized wiretaps, things like that. And for a long time, the FBI has been, in effect, the secret police of the Democrat Party. Go back to the Clintons. remember when the Travelgate scandal and the fact that they had compiled dossiers on all the leading Republicans. Now, you can say, oh, it's the guy at the top. Yes, but they weren't. It's not just them. It was the agents who went around wherever these people came from and collected that information. And they staked their credibility on it. And then you had these god-awful leaders, Louis Free, who is now involved with something else, and the whole business about Hillary Clinton and the Clinton emails, and the director of the FBI say making statements about the legality, well, we can't really prosecute her, etc. I mean, this is insane. But when they broke into Mar-a-Lago, they showed the country, that was one thing they couldn't conceal, and they showed the country really how evil they were in terms of being willing to do anything to go after President Trump.
Well, my feeling is that, you know, we've had a lot of political passion in the country's history. You know, a lot of the outgoing president didn't like the incoming president and vice versa. Mm-hmm. But we never crossed this line. You know, there was kind of there was an understanding between both sides that if you do this, you're, in a sense, changing the game, because if all of a sudden now I'm the outgoing president, I, at least in the past, I knew that they weren't going to come after me. But now, you know, if the rules have changed and now they can go after you because, you know, they can go into your home, take documents and not explain. This is my biggest disappointment that in anger, really, I get angry that here we are 5 weeks into this and the Attorney General has not addressed the nation and said, this is why we did this. Here is the document. And I don't know what's going to come out of this. My sense is that it's going to be very difficult to take legal action against President Trump because of the Hillary Clinton incident that you talked about. I mean, we all remember. I remember quite well driving my car and listening to William Comey, Director Comey, enumerate like for 20 minutes all of the things that Hillary Clinton had done, Frank. And I'm sitting there driving saying, this lady's going to the electric chair. I mean, if you just think of all the things that they were enumerating.
Exactly.
Including a private server. I mean, I'm sitting there driving my car. I can still remember where I was over here at Preston and LBJ. I'm driving. And I'm saying to myself, oh, my God. I mean, what jail is going to take? I mean, this lady is in deep trouble. And then you get to the end, and it's like, we don't think any prosecutor would take this. And I said to myself, really, really, Director Comey? First of all, who gave you the authority to say that? You're supposed to be the FBI, not the Attorney General. So they lost so much credibility when they didn't do anything to Hillary Clinton that in a way, that's the insurance policy around President Trump, that it's going to be very difficult to explain to the American people why you accept one and not the other. What I wish they would do, Frank, is I wish the Attorney General tomorrow morning would say, look, you know, we went in, we have the documents that we think we need to have, and we're bringing this to an end, and that this is the end of it. Nothing's going to happen. That's what that's the rational way to end this game. But there's something you mentioned called Trump derangement syndrome. I don't know if they have the ability to restrain themselves, and that is the key. Can they restrain themselves? Can they say, okay, this is how far we're going to go. We're not going to go any further. I don't know if they have that ability, Frank.
I don't think they do, and I'll tell you why. Because if you look at what the end game is, why did they do this? The end game is, can we indict and convict President Trump for something which would preclude him as a convicted felon from running for president again? They are deathly afraid that Trump will run again and that he will win. So it's much more than just, well, what did he do? No, it's about what could he do, not what did he do. And what he could do is become president again.
That's it. And they seem to be scared to death of that idea. And I find it kind of ironic because if they were to keep President Trump from running again, that would mean that Governor DeSantis would be the nominee, and I think he has a better chance of winning than President Trump does.
Because, I think you're right. You know,
so in a sense, they want Trump out of the equation, but they could end up actually making it easier for a Republican to win, because I do believe sincerely that a Governor DeSantis would have a much better chance of winning the presidency, because he has all the good. I mean, basically, he's Donald Trump without being from New York. I don't know how else to explain it other than that.
Right. He doesn't have the baggage. Yeah, you're right.
That's it. I mean, he's just, but in so many ways, he's quite similar. But my disappointment is that if you're going to cross a line like this, where you're going to go after a former president, and here we are 5 weeks into it, and all we have is leaks to the Washington Post, that confirms, I think, my fears that this may have been politically motivated, because I don't know what else it could be. If it was something that serious, I think they would have told us already, Frank. And now I understand President Biden is saying that he didn't know anything about it. Well, you know, Frank,
impossible.
I think they have – that is impossible. I just cannot believe the Attorney General would do something like this without taking it, I mean, to President Biden. So I have a feeling that we'll talk about this the next time you're on, Frank.
I think so, too. And, you know, the great thing is and I'm not always crazy about Mitch McConnell, but – when you look at what Merrick Garland is like as a person, when you look at his morals, when you look at his sense of justice, all you can say is, thank God that man is not on the Supreme Court.
Right. No, you're right. That's when we're grateful to Minority Leader McConnell.
Yes.
Because you're right. I mean, he was the one who stopped him. He was saying, I'm not going to put it up to a vote. And that turned out to be 100% correct. Frank, let me take a break. We'll take a little break and we'll come back to Frank. We got a lot more to get into with our friend Frank Burke right after this.
We have a 3-hour show tonight.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our good friend Frank Burke. Frank is the author of a book. He's a businessman, and he's a great friend of our show. And right before we took a break, Frank said we were going to do a 3-hour show. But I don't think we will, Frank. We don't have, as they say, we don't
thankfully
have enough tape. Yeah, we don't have enough tape to do the show for 3 hours. We sure have. We have at least another 30 minutes to go, so we got lots of time.
We have enough subjects to do it for 3 hours, yes.
Yes, you're exactly right about that. Well, let's go to another very interesting topic, and that is the passing of Queen Elizabeth. Now, I will say up front that I'm not into monarchies. It's not something that I care a great deal about. You know, it's just I know that it's more, I guess, decoration and tradition and ceremony, and I'm all for that. But, you know, I don't know how I would feel if I was a British citizen and I was spending all this money maintaining or supporting all these people. I don't know how I would feel. But I liked Queen Elizabeth. I thought she was a very nice lady. And the reason I thought she was a nice lady, Frank, is because there's something about that generation that she was a part of where people were nice. They were elegant. They were reliable. And now that she's gone, you feel like, oh, my God, you know, more and more people of that generation are passing, whether it was my parents, whether it was Queen Elizabeth, you know, people like that. We miss people like that in our society. That's how I feel about the Queen. She was a very nice lady. I don't know how else to say it, Frank.
Well, I think you said it beautifully, Silvio. That was a beautiful kind of remembrance of her. And the first thing I would say about her, in line with what you're saying, and I agree with you completely, remember that she was a World War II veteran also. She helped the British forces, drove an ambulance, did not act like the crown princess, although she knew she would someday be queen, but did everything she could to help the country during World War II as a young girl and as a young woman. But I think what she means to us and what she's meant to the British population and maybe to the world population, she was an emblem of stability. She was something that was always there. And, you know, you think of the word monarchy. Well, it has many definitions. You know, you're talking about George III. You're talking about Idi Amin. No, it was a shadow of itself. It was ceremonial in many ways. But it was emblematic of the country, of its traditions, of its past. And bear in mind that Britain is a tremendously changing country. They've taken in a tremendous number of immigrants from all around the world, which has not been easy and has not always been a good thing. It's been a contentious subject, as it is here now, but it's been going on for years over there, and it hasn't always been a good thing. You know, you have this fellow who is a Muslim, who is the Lord Mayor of London. And some of his statements have been highly controversial. Some of his actions have been highly controversial. But as you've seen all this change in the world and in Britain and in the decline of the empires, what they called the empire, and all of that, this nice, kindly woman who stayed largely out of politics has been symbolic of some of the best that the country was, the traditions, the customs, things like the architecture, the gardens, the British customs, the tea time, the pastries, you name it. Britain isn't noted for its food, which I think is unjust. I was over there years ago and for a very short time, but I really like the food. Anyway, the pubs, the pint in the afternoon, Charles Dickens, everything it's given to the world, the first Industrial Revolution, all of that came out of Britain. The Industrial Revolution started there, 1769. James Watt improves the Newcomen steam engine. And suddenly you have power wherever you have fuel that you can burn. And many of the early machines were developed there. The United States came out of Great Britain. Much of our constitution, much of our laws, our legal system, is based on the British legal system. Not so much the system of government, but the legal system, going back to 1215, when King John signed the Magna Carta, and the concept of the rights of man. And we're very close to those people. We're very close in so many ways. With the literature, Western literature, so much of what we know, Shakespeare. And she, again, was emblematic of that country from which all of that evolved. And absolutely. You know, God bless her, and God rest her soul, and God save the new king. He's going right. to have a tough time. But I think he'll get through it.
Oh, yeah. If he can stop talking about climate change.
Yes.
I think because he got a little nutty with that. Maybe he had too much time. I don't know. They're not really supposed to be involved. And that, in fact, some people are saying Charles III now needs to, King Charles III, I should say, to be respectful, he needs to get away from all these little causes that he was in. I think that when you're Prince of Wales, for like 50 years, after a while, you don't know what to do. So you start thinking, okay, what can I get involved in now? So hopefully now as the king, he can focus more on, I guess, what the king does. But here's the amazing thing to me. about the queen, the late queen, I should say. She became queen with Harry Truman in the White House. Harry Truman was going out on his way out. It was
yes.
last year, 1952. And she dies with Joe Biden in office 2022. That's, I don't know how many presidents that is, but that's quite a few. From Prime Minister
yes.
Churchill to the new Prime Minister. So that's a long time. And 90% of the planet probably had never known the king before, her father. So most of the world,
right.
she was the only monarchy they knew just because
yeah.
of how long she was in there. So I don't know. You know your British history better than me, but was she the longest running monarch? I don't know.
She was.
70 years.
She, I think it was 15 American presidents, every president except Lyndon Johnson. And she was the longest reigning British monarch and likely to hold that record, really. Now,
yes.
the one thing that Charles has going for him is basically his son, William, and Kate Middleton, because mm-hmm. they have been an incredibly classy act.
Yes,
not just
they
that they've avoided all kinds of nonsense, you know, the party scene and all that garbage, but they're raising their kids. You know, they're not going to move into the palace yet because the kids
mm-hmm.
just started school. They're thinking
right.
like, you know, an American couple or a British couple
right.
who love their family first. No, you don't want to pull the kids out yet. God, their grandmother just died. They just started
mm-hmm.
school. Let's give them some stability for a while. But they are
yeah.
nice people, and I think that people relate to them. And even if you're not crazy for Charles, if you say, oh, gosh, shut up about the climate change, Charles, whatever, you still feel, okay, when he's gone, and it will not be a very long reign. I don't wish him an early death at all. I wish him all the luck in the world. And I hope he, you know, takes the hint and stays away from politics. But we know what's coming after. And what from here, from the viewpoint here, what's coming after looks really nice.
It does. I think the idea of King William, and would she become queen then, Catherine?
She'll become queen consort.
Oh, okay.
She will become what they call queen consort because for the reason that there is a male heir. Now,
okay.
if they had no male children, there is the possibility that on his demise, she would be queen, or if she had a daughter, the daughter would be queen.
Okay.
As when Henry VIII died, Elizabeth became queen. She was his daughter,
okay.
and there was no male heir.
And I was hearing the other day, one last little story here about the queen before we return to the nasty world of politics. But I was reading the other day that it was her father's brother who was the one who gave up the monarchy, because of the marriage to the American woman. I know that I'm not using the right words, but I think he was the king, right? But he married the American woman
right.
and therefore gave up the monarchy, and that's how her father became the king, I think. Is that correct? Is that the story?
That's correct. Yep.
Yeah.
Edward VII.
I don't remember his name, though. I don't remember who was it? The
Edward.
King? King Edward, okay.
Elizabeth's
father
was
King George?
Edward VIII, possibly. Then her father was George, yes.
Okay. All right, because I think William's little boy is George, I understand.
Yes,
the little
that's
boy.
Correct.
But you know what's amazing? I said no more about the queen, but I have to say this. We may be looking at the next 100 years of monarchy just between King Charles III, William, who would become king at a fairly young age. I mean, let's say he becomes king in the next 10 years. That would be, he is 50 years old by the time he becomes king. Let's say he lives, I don't know, 25, 30 years, and his son becomes king. So we could be looking at the next 100 years of the king of, you know, those three people could be the next three kings, the current king, and the next two, Frank.
Yes. You're absolutely right. The one who married Wallace Simpson, who was from Baltimore, was Edward VIII. That was his title, King Edward VIII.
And he was king when he did that, right? He's already the king, right, when he did that?
Yes, I believe so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, but fascinating story. As I said, I'm not into monarchies, but I have to admit that I like this queen better than I like some of the other queens, who I think
yes.
are a bunch of, anyway, not as nice as this nice lady who just passed
right.
away. Well, I got a couple of topics I want to get into, and the time is flying. And we do not have 3 hours tonight, so for that reason, let's get to the next topic. Okay, President Biden's speech. I guess he gave more than one. You're very good with words. You're in your business. You do a lot of writing. It just seems to me that either he has some very bad advisors, or he is very stubborn. Or, again, we go back to the Trump derangement syndrome thing, that, you know, Trump is living rent-free in these people's heads. And he basically, they do a lot of stupid things about Trump. I mean, why would you give a speech like that and call half of the country your enemy? It just doesn't make any sense, Frank.
It doesn't. And it was a disgraceful harangue by a senile, corrupt, very angry old man who is totally under the control of people who have not been elected. I mean, there is no doubt at this point in anybody's mind that Joe Biden is totally cognitively impaired, which is a nice way of saying he's senile, whether it's dementia, Alzheimer's, or whatever. But the man does not know where he is much of the time. He makes speeches that he goes off the speeches and speaks in nonsense and gibberish. I mean, it's tragic. It would be very tragic if it were not for the fact that you're looking at something that's extremely dangerous. You cannot have a person in the presidency of the United States, the leadership of the free world, who does not really know what he's doing, which leads us to the question of, well, who is putting the stuff in his mouth? Why is he doing this? It's not as though he sat down and made a rational decision to say this. If he's not reading a teleprompter, he's lost. He gets lost. But he is greedy. You're looking at a situation where there is evidence, very strong evidence of corruption, that his son, like Pelosi's son, has been heavily involved with the Chinese. And many of the things that he's done have been ultimately to the benefit of China. The open border on the south of this country, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All this fentanyl that's coming in is made in China. They are getting a lot of money from this. If that border were closed, that would be stopped.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at many other things where they're buying American farmland. They have bought American companies. A few years back, they bought, now he was not president, when they bought Smithfield, which is the largest producer of pork. So they have their hand on the pulse of so much of this. They could do us an estimable harm. And when he opened up the Strategic Petroleum Reserve and a whole millions of barrels of that were sold to China. Come on, this is a national security threat, and this man is doing this. So, no, I have no respect for him, and he is a dangerous person. He does not have the welfare of this country or its people at heart. Look at the number of days he's away from the office on these so-called vacations in Delaware. Come on, this is nuts.
Right. It reminded me of that article that you wrote about the managerial style of Barack Obama. And you wrote this about 10 years ago. And it's an article that I think about a great deal because you were talking about Barack Obama. But, you know, remember that part of your article was that sometimes you have a what you called, I think, a passive managerial style, you know, the manager.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the guy who spends all his time away from the office, you know, attending things that have nothing to do with the company. Yes. That's the feeling that I get here, that we have a man who is simply out of touch with what's happening. I don't know who is running. I mean, all kinds of speculation. A lot of people say it's Obama. A lot of people say it's this little group around him. I don't know, honestly. It's hard to tell. Not Dick Morris, but Bill O'Reilly. Recently, I was listening to one of his podcasts, and he says, I've got some pretty good sources, and I believe that he does, in the White House, who are telling him that President Biden, Joe Biden, really, really wants to get Trump, that in a sense he's become obsessed with Trump, and that has a lot to do with what's going on, that speech was more about President Biden hating Trump than it was about, you know, you and me being a threat to the country, Frank. I mean, that you and me, I mean, we're not a threat to the country any more than, you know, as I was telling somebody the other day, Frank, that I remember when it was very fashionable to say that the president was not legitimate. Remember President Bush the second time? President Trump? I mean, heck, it was fashionable to say these things, that the guy was not legitimate. Remember when it was fashionable not to want to certify the Electoral College? They did it to Bush. Yep. They did it to Trump. So, I mean, I guess it was okay when they were doing it, Frank.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, it's one of those things where if you look at some of these people, and it's not just Biden, it's all over. If you look at the publishers of these newspapers, there's a going back. I'm not going back to the Queen now, but in Charles Dickens' semi-biographical novel, David Copperfield, there is a wonderful old character, as only Dickens could write him, called Mr. Dick, who lives with David Copperfield's aunt. And he's constantly writing memorials, all this, you know, high-flown pieces of literature, but he can't stop getting Charles the First into them. King Charles the First keeps coming up, and he can't get rid of him. No matter what he writes, ultimately it's about Charles the First. And he's crazy. But this is what Trump is to so many of these people. They cannot get rid of Trump. He's haunting them.
They're obsessed with him. As I mentioned a bit ago, you know, he lives rent-free in their head.
Yes,
and,
beautifully
put. And, you know, every time you look at these people, you know, there's Trump in their forehead, you know, laughing to death because he knows that he's driving them crazy. The other day, and I'll say one more thing about this. The other day, Senator Ted Cruz was doing a podcast or being interviewed, and they asked him about Liz Cheney. And they said, what happened to Liz Cheney? I mean, how does this lady go from being a year and a half ago being a reliably conservative lady that we all loved? How did she go from that to where she is now? And I thought Senator Cruz hit it out of the park. He said, you know, Trump has a way of breaking people. He has a way of just driving people, I'm paraphrasing what he said, driving people crazy, which is what you're talking about from the famous Mr. Dick from David Copperfield.
Yes.
And that's right. I mean, these people just go crazy when they, you know, Charles Krauthammer was the one who invented the Bush derangement syndrome line. And he said that when he was talking about George W. Bush, he said these people would go nuts at the mere sight, at the voice, or at anything that was Bush. If they thought that George W. Bush was within 5 feet of them, they would go nuts.
Yes.
And that's what Trump is, but 10 times worse. Trump derangement syndrome, they call it, and that's a good line.
Well, you know what this could be, and I hope a number of our listeners are old enough to remember this, the show. This is a Twilight Zone episode.
That's right. Right. Yes, I'm waiting for Rod Sterling at any moment to come on TV and say, and this is the Twilight. You know, I know. I'm waiting
exactly.
for Rod Sterling to step into into it, because you're exactly right. That's what this is. This is the Twilight Zone. We're living in the Twilight Zone.
It would be something like a president. Yeah, a president, or really a demon. How did he possess so many minds?
right. No. I it would be something like this, you know, in the Rod Sterling style that I cannot imitate, but in his style,
right.
It would be something like, back in 2022, in a country called the United States, there was a man living in the Oval Office, a Joe Biden from Delaware, married to Jill, and every morning he would wake up at 6 and tell Jill, I need to do something today to get rid of Trump. What can I do today? Something like
that. I saw him again last night, Jill.
Yes.
I saw him.
Yes. I saw him
He's
again
here.
Last night. He came to visit me again. I know. Exactly
at the
right
end of the... At the end of the show, Rod Sterling would say something like, Joe Biden, President of the United States. This
right,
is how he
exactly.
went
no,
from
no.
Washington, D.C. to the Twilight Zone.
No, that's exactly right. That's a great way to put it, Frank, the Twilight Zone. But one quick thing here. We got a couple of minutes, but they got some big elections up in Wisconsin. Wisconsin has been one of those very contested states recently.
Yes.
It's gone both ways, but it's always been by a very small number. There's a governor's race and there's a Senate race. I feel comfortable about the Senate race. I think Senator Johnson will pull it off. But what do you
think
of the
too.
Governor's race? The governor's race, I don't know anything about. How do you feel about it?
Well, I would like to see Michaels, who is the Trump-supported candidate, take it. And he has the ideas. He has the strength. It is unfortunately what propelled this Tony Evers, who comes out of an educational background but does not come off as an educated man, is the fact of the unions, the teachers union and the SEIU. It's the unions that have put him in there. He's been extremely weak. Thank God we have a strong Republican legislature. But, you know, he wanted to raise the gas tax by a ridiculous amount at the height of the price increases with inflation. He does nothing. They're running a commercial about him that isn't it terrible that Michaels wants to take money away from education and fund private schools with it? Well, Tony Evers would never do that. Well, this is the best Michaels ad I have seen, and it's being run by Evers.
Okay.
The problem
right.
is that we have a terrible educational problem in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. We have a crime
yes.
problem. But it's crime murders are up by 100% in the city of
mm-hmm.
Milwaukee. It's
yeah.
leading the nation. Not in the number of people killed, but in the percentage of increase.
That's right.
Our schools... scores in the they have not even released them. They are so bad in the cities. In communities like where I live, the schools are fine. But the problem is that the money that has been spent on education has gone to administrative people, salaries, all this kind of stuff. It has not gone to things that would help the children.
Right.
And so they're in a real mess. And this guy was supposed to be an educator. So
right.
I think Michael stands a really good chance because at this point, you know, a lot of black people and Hispanics who are the people in the cities are saying, wait a minute, I don't want my kid in that school. Oh,
right.
Give me a charter school. Give me a parochial school.
Mm-hmm.
Give me school choice. And
that's right.
I don't want them learning critical race theory. I don't want this gender stuff and pronouns and all that garbage. I really think the left, by going so far to the left, has overplayed its hand.
I think so.
The kind of stuff that you could get away with in Europe, that this World Economic Forum, which is an agglomeration of the old decadent royalty and nobles, who corrupt business people and movie stars that believe they're an elite that want to rule the world and want to bring down the United States so they can rule that, is going to come a cropper against Americans. A lot of us, especially the younger people, have bought the line that, oh, we're all the same. It's one big world. But a lot of us also, you, myself, are definitely our generation, and a number of young people have come to the conclusion that this is nonsense, that we need to come back to common sense. Men cannot get pregnant. You cannot change your gender. You were born a male. You're not going to go on the women's team, which is ridiculous. What happened at my alma mater, the University of Pennsylvania? I'm ashamed of it with that swim team.
Right. No, you're right, and I think you're right. I think a lot they've gone too far. They've gone too far, and they've pushed a lot of reasonable people. And I think in the case of education, that's one of the biggest problems that they've created. And I'll tell you, I mean, just one quick thought here before we go, because we're just about out of time, but something like 250,000 kids just in California alone have not gone back to public schools. They've been taken out of the public schools by the parents. And yet you have similar numbers in states. And that's not and I want to make sure this is clear, that's not a knock on the teachers. I think most of the teachers are very good and probably pretty angry with what's going on, too. It's a knock on the administration. And it gets worse in the blue states. That's unfortunately the way it is. And with that statement, Frank, we're going to have to say goodnight. But I want to thank you so much for joining us. And maybe instead of a three-hour show, we'll do three shows. How is that for a better way of doing it? We'll do it. We'll do three shows. But I do want to do another show with you down the road on education. It's a great topic and one that you know
definitely a
great deal about. So thank you for joining us tonight. Enjoy that beautiful weather in Wisconsin, and make sure you sit down by the fireplace. And enjoy a little wine and music. And think of me. Think of us when you're doing that. Think of Jesus.
I definitely will.
We need to invite them up here to our nice little farm and have a...
You're always welcome. You're always welcome.
Yeah, a little wine by the fireplace. I have a feeling that we would love that, Frank. I think we would really
I think you would,
that.
And you're more... Yes. Well, just let me know when. You're be on your way. But I just want to say thanks so much.
Yes.
This has been fun. God bless to you and the audience, and God save the king.
That's it. That's right. We now have to say God save the king. And thanks for reminding me of Dr. Dick on the David Copperfield. It had been a long time since I've heard that name, Frank. So thank you reminding me of that. My English teacher would be proud that we're talking about that topic tonight. Thank you so much, Frank, and good night to you.
Good night now, Silvio. Bye-bye.
All right, good night. Our good friend, Frank Burke, who always reminds me of something, and now he reminds me of David Copperfield. I read that when I was in high school. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and have a great evening.